This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Peter Schaeffer's portrayal of Mozart's last days in the stage and film versions of his play Amadeus may have made for great drama, but it was not exactly historically accurate. Antonio Salieri had no contact with Mozart that final week. There was a mysterious cloaked figure, but everyone knew who it was. The mourners at Mozart's funeral were not forced to abandon the ceremony because of bad weather, and most importantly, Mozart was almost certainly not poisoned. The real story, though, is even more dramatic, primarily because nobody knows exactly what did happen. But the main facts that both stories have in common relate to the most important outcome of those final days, the composition of Mozart's last, great, and unfinished work, his Requiem in D minor. The story of Mozart's Requiem has been so embellished over the years that it's difficult to remember how extraordinary the truth is. One day, in July of 1791, a certain Franz Anton Leitgeb was dispatched on an errand to a house in the center of Vienna. He could not have imagined the fame he and his gray cloak would acquire from this short journey. Leitgeb was the steward of Count Franz Walsegg zu Stuppach, a young musical amateur who liked to give secret and lucrative commissions to composers and then have the resulting pieces presented as his own. Sometimes he liked to have the audience at his musicales guess the composer, and since just about everyone was aware of his scheme, they knew exactly what to say. Walsegg's young wife had recently passed away, and he felt it appropriate to produce a requiem, so he sent Leitgeb to inquire whether the imperial court composer Mozart would be inclined to write such a piece, and at what price. Mozart was instructed to make no attempt to learn who the buyer was, but most likely he knew very well. Mozart, who was in need of money as usual, accepted the commission. But first, he had to complete La Clemenza di Tito for the festivities in Prague around the coronation of Emperor Leopold II as King of Bohemia. Then he had to prepare the magic flute for its first performance in Vienna. He also composed a clarinet concerto for his friend Anton Stadler, completing that score in early October. Only then was it time for the Requiem, and it's at this point that the details begin to blur. There are a few certainties about the last 2 months of Mozart's life. He enjoyed the success of the magic flute, conducting the first performance and attending several others, and he was pleased that it was hard even for him to get tickets. He was busy with a heap of personal and professional projects and full of good resolutions about keeping the family finances on a more even keel. At the same time, Mozart had not felt really well since returning from the premiere of La Clemenza di Tito in Prague, and he was depressed. At times, he was convinced that he was being poisoned by aqua tofana, a slow-acting mixture of arsenic, antimony, and lead, which was often used by unhappy wives to get rid of their husbands. all sorts of conspiracy theories have sprung up in the last two centuries based on the fact that Mozart wrote down these suspicions. The possible culprits range from Mozart's Masonic Lodge brothers to the Illuminati to some sort of vast international Judeo-Christian one-world underground. But Costanza Mozart, who was far smarter than her portrayal in Amadeus might suggest, was convinced that it was working on the Requiem itself that was getting her husband down, the more so since he was gripped from time to time by the idea that he was writing the Requiem for himself. Eventually, she simply took the score away from him, and he moved on to a cantata celebrating the opening of a new temple for his Masonic lodge. The cantata completely belies Mozart's state of mind. It's bright and cheery, the handwriting in the manuscript is firm and sure, and everyone loved it when it was sung on November 17th. 3 days later, though, Mozart became suddenly and acutely ill, with high fever, violently upset stomach, and inflammation of his hands and feet to the point of near immobilization. Speculation has yielded hundreds of possible causes for his death, but scholars now generally accept the diagnosis of acute rheumatic fever. He died at 12:55 a.m. on December 5th and was buried late the following day, or early in the morning of the 7th. As for the Requiem, things get even murkier. The only parts that Mozart had completed in full score were the Introitus and the Kyrie. His student and friend, Franz Xaver Süssmayr, complicated things by forging Mozart's signature and dating it 1792. Costanza was understandably concerned about losing the commission if it came out how little of the piece her husband had actually finished, so she might well have suggested the forgery. She did ask several of her husband's friends to complete it. Josef Eibler started, but either got distracted or felt he wasn't up to the job. Ironically, Eibler died in 1833 while conducting the Requiem. Eventually, Süssmayr agreed to the task. His work has the air of authenticity, since he had earlier written part of La Clemenza di Tito at Mozart's request, and he claimed to have been Mozart's sounding board and test subject during the composition process. Even though almost a dozen other composers have produced completions, it is Süssmayr's version that is most often performed today. As for Count Walsegg, who had commissioned the piece, well, he did exactly what he might have been expected to do. He took the finished manuscript that Süssmayr delivered to him, put his own name on it, and conducted it in Vienna in 1793. One of the most unusual features of the Requiem is that the wind section uses only lower-voiced instruments, basset horns, which are deeper cousins of the clarinet, bassoons, trumpets, and trombones. The dark quality this brings to the instrumental color may have reinforced the story that Mozart felt it would be his own Requiem. He also reaches back into the past for effect. A line from the Introitus quotes a Gregorian chant that was also used by Bach, and in the Kyrie, Mozart wrote a double fugue, an incredibly intricate technique that was a favorite of both Bach and Handel. Was Mozart's musical life flashing before his eyes? We'll never know. So much myth has grown up around Mozart's Requiem that it often threatens to overshadow the sheer power of the work itself. This is a piece conceived by one of history's greatest composers at the height of his powers and completed by his last student. Much like Tchaikovsky's Pathetic Symphony, it stands as its composer's ultimate testament, whether or not he knew it would be his ultimate work. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.